Hey there, welcome to the Extra Innings Podcast here at the Seattle Times. Ryan Divish, Mariners beat writer. I'm coming to you live from the Scenic Courtyard by Marriott in Chicago on Sunday night. I flew out of Cleveland to get to Chicago, got to get back. Never easy getting into Cleveland, just not. But I can say that thanks to American Airlines and some travel issues, I was able to drive from Detroit to Cleveland in 2 hours at 5 a.m. I got to go through Toledo, Ohio in the dark. That was interesting. So I can say I've been through Toledo, Ohio. So if you ever have to go from Detroit to Cleveland or Cleveland to Detroit, don't fly, because it's like hard to get a direct there for some reason. You have to go to Chicago and all this stuff. So just drive, 2 hours, pretty easy. I'm from Montana, got to drive 2 hours to get to anywhere. So, or, you know, 2 hours if you want to go to a Husky football game from Tacoma, or just work on 8 o'clock on a Friday. This week's episode, obviously we'll go through the week that was, the trip that was, the road trip from hell. Larry Stone and I discussed the injuries to Felix Hernandez, Mitch Haniger. We graded the road trip, what went right, what went wrong. And then we also kind of started to look at the rotation, the issues with the starting rotation, with the absence of Felix. And then, of course, we got into first base and catcher, two of the kind of the glaring holes in the lineup right now. We discussed Dan Vogelbach, who we would start on Tuesday when the Mariners opened the homestand. We got to the catching situation, how long you give Mike Zunino to turn it around before you make a move and maybe send him to Tacoma. So we did all those things. And then also discussed Fernando Rodney experience in our ex-Mariner alert segment that we're going to do from now on. So sit back, listen to Larry and I make fun of each other about our math skills and other stuff, and enjoy the show. Thanks. All right, we got Larry Stone on the phone. He's sitting in Bellevue. Is it raining there?
It's been raining off and on today.
I'm stunned. It's rained in the area. I can't believe it.
There is supposed to be a 70-degree day coming this week, though, so you're coming home just in time.
Oh, I don't want that. I want to be miserable and suffer.
I'm heading out of town, of course.
Yes.
I'm going to my daughter's graduation in Boston. So you just, that's a guarantee that the great weather is coming when I get out. So that's my gift to you.
I'm not going to lie that in the summertime when it gets really warm, and since I don't have air conditioning, I don't mind going on the road because I know the hotels I stay in do, and I don't like sleeping at night when I'm warm. So I never get upset about that.
You know, you can probably get a fan at Target for $20, so that would keep you warm, and then you wouldn't have that problem. Or keep you cool.
That they don't help. I like to be, you know, I like to have my air circulated unnaturally. All right, enough about this. Well, let's get to it. After your math issues last week, the Mariners went 4-6 on the road trip. Did you predict that?
Not only did I predict that, but I predicted it exactly. I said they were going to win 2 out of 3 in Detroit and lose 2 out of 3 in Cleveland, and that's exactly what happened. So
by your math,
everyone was laughing at my math. I was nailing the baseball.
Yeah, you got the predictions right. You still got the math wrong. You had them like 3-9 or something. I have no idea.
I just got a little confused. I'm not that bad at math. I could actually add up small numbers, but for some reason I just got thrown off.
Sure you go.
And the worst part was you. I could just hear you giggling and letting me, and not helping me out at all, just letting me take my own hole and climb in, and taking much glee from that. That's what hurts.
Oh yeah, no, I'm gonna make you just look bad. I mean, that makes me look good. It's like
that's not hard.
No, yeah, it's like why I'm willing to go. Like if we go out to a bar with Condota and Jinx and stuff, I'm always willing to go because I look better by being associated with those guys.
So. That's shrewd, very shrewd.
So, what were your thoughts of the road trip?
Well, it was not a great road trip. You know, you had the injury that black what was it, Black Tuesday or whatever it was.
Yeah.
When Felix went down, Haniger went down. That was, those are two terrible injuries. They're going to be out a month, it looks like. You know, the guy that you had penciled in as your number one pitcher and a guy who had been your best player overall suddenly out of the lineup. But you did have, you know, Gamble had some nice moments. Mottor continued to have some nice moments. Paxton pitched well. Cruz is on fire. But, you know, I'm sure we're going to talk about this, but there's just too many black holes in this lineup down at the bottom. You know, guys that just are not carrying their weight, and I think they're going to have to do something about that. First base and catcher I'm referring to. And, you know, I still think this team is a good team, and I still think they have – solid shot at the playoff, but they just have not found their stride yet. And, you know, in addition to the problems that I mentioned, the back end of the rotation is going to be an issue. I don't know what Dakota, if he could swing a trade at this point in the year. Do you go to a guy like Posey or Andrew Moore? Because there's not that much depth in AAA. I guess Bergman may be the next guy. I don't know. But there's some troubling issues, but there's also some good signs.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it on Sunday, last Sunday, but the big part, what makes this road trip look bad is the first part of it, the Oakland part. You lose three or four to the A's, and you lose a game with James Paxton pitching against the A's. That's what makes you look bad. I mean, that was the bad part, because if you split with Oakland, then you split this road trip. You know, then you go 5-5. You have the injuries, whatever. You probably, you know, beating Cleveland is difficult in Cleveland, especially when you have to face, you know, Carrasco and Santana, and you beat Carrasco. But yeah, I just it wasn't great in a lot of senses. I mean, I think Nelson Cruz hitting was good, but I mean, really, it just continued to expose some of the flaws that they have on the roster, and you know, we'll get to that as you mentioned. Thoughts on the injuries when you saw that kind of stuff go down? What were you thinking?
Well, the Haniger one was really, I think, that really hurt, because the kid was going so well, and it looked like he was going to be a breakout star in not just on the Mariners, but I think he was starting to get league-wide attention and notice. He was, you know, there was a point there when he had the highest WAR in the major leagues. He was ahead of Trout at the point that he was injured. I think he was at a 2.2 WAR this early in the season, which is incredible. And it's a worrisome injury, too. You know, you say 3 to 4 weeks, but we've all seen obliques that have lingered longer than that, because it's a vital area for your swing. So I'll believe it when I see it. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if it's more like 6 weeks. You want to err on the side of caution with that. And Felix, you know, it's just more piling on of the troubles for Felix on top of what happened last year. He had been really hit around most of the time this year. He had one really good start, but he'd given up more hits than anyone in the league. He just still didn't look like the Felix that we have come to know and maybe we'll never see again. You know, we had all that optimism in the offseason, but it really wasn't playing out into the season, so we'll just have to see if, you know, a month does the trick for him, or, you know, I guess he's even more optimistic that he might be back sooner, but, you know, he's a major cause for concern for this team, because you pencil in, you when you think about the Mariners, you think of Felix being a really good pitcher, and if he's not, that changes the whole equation.
Yeah, with the Haniger thing, you're right. I've never seen an oblique strain that wasn't at least 4 weeks, and almost all of them are about six, because you're talking about, you know, they're healthy after four, but then it takes, a 5 or 6 days of games and, you know, all this other extra work. And I mean, you know, now he's got to go back and get his timing back. You never know. He's never dealt with an oblique injury before, so you don't know how that's going to affect him. You know, there's a lot of torque on his swing, so... You know, this is an issue. It was a blow to that team. I mean, especially because then when you get guys like Cruz starting to hit, and then even Seager a little bit, then you think, okay, now they're going to go. You get Segura back in the lineup, and the day Segura comes back, he's out. Felix is interesting to me. in the sense that, you know, he doesn't get arm injuries. That's the thing. You know, the last time he had an arm injury where he was on the disabled list was 2007, with flexor strain in his elbow or in his forearm. And then in 2005, he also dealt with bursitis. But it is an issue. I mean, look, he hasn't been great this year. You know, people have complained about, you know, the hits given up, and he has. I mean, I think that's part of his plan to pitch to contact, and it hasn't been crisp at times. But I think also, but you look at it this way. Even when he's bad, he still usually gives you five. Now, he left after two innings, but that was because the injury didn't feel right. But even, like, when he had, I think it was against, he had the one start where he's just giving up hit after hit after hit. He still got you through six. You look at today, his replacement is giving up hit after hit and didn't get any help from his defense, but he only gets through two and a third, or two and two-thirds, and they have to pull him. And I think that's the one thing, is that with Felix, you know he's going to, you know, get you your five or six innings on most nights, and you're out there. I mean, now you look at your rotation, you have James Paxton, who's your basically your one. He's pitched like a one. You have Sashiba Kuma as your two. And then after that, it gets pretty sparse. I mean, and, you know, Miranda was decent the last time out, but, you know, you don't really know what you're going to get with him. Gallardo, I mean, you know, for five innings, he was really good. But for one inning, he walked the world, and you can't do that. And then you have DeYoung, or if they deal with Dylan Overton or Chris Heston or whatever. I mean, you know, even whatever Felix was, and he wasn't his old self, it's still better, and there's still a better rotation with him in it.
Yeah, no question about it. He's that is to his credit. He is a workhorse, even when he's struggling. He finds a way to get through and get you the five or six or seven innings. I mean, depth was going to be a problem with this rotation, and now you've lost Smiley and you've lost Felix. You're probably in the off season, the guys you had penciled in is 1-2 or 1-3, or, you know, and now you're dipping into the minor league sort of journeyman type guys that you just can't rely on to be that good. That's why, you know, I'm concerned about that rotation depth with Smiley out for so long, and Felix, you just don't know. I don't. They need somebody to emerge from that group, whether it's a Heston, like you said, or they dip down into Double A, or DePoto goes out and finds somebody on the market or something. You know, because that more than anything could be their undoing, I think, is the lack of rotation depth at this point.
Yeah, it'll be hard to go out. I mean, anybody you would get outside of the organization, I mean, is probably just another guy, unless you're giving up a lot. But I mean, it's early in the year too. I mean, not many teams are in sell mode, although a few of them might be about another week or so, and might be the Mariners. I don't know. But yeah.
No one wants to give up the season this early.
Well, I mean, they couldn't get a pitcher that they really, I mean, other than Smiley, I mean, they didn't have much of a market for a pitcher in the offseason because they didn't have anybody that anybody really wanted. So it's hard to make a trade when you don't have prospects that people want as well.
Exactly. So you're just going to have to bite the bullet and just maybe mix and match and like I said, just hope somebody emerges, and then you hope that Gallardo and you know, the other guys, just Miranda, can stay a little bit more consistent, and you can weather this storm until you get at least Felix back. Who knows about Smiley? When he's going to come back and how he's going to be, you just don't know now.
I would see if maybe they move Posey and Moore at least up to double or to triple A, at least get him a start or two up there, maybe, if they're considering that. Because, you know, you get to triple A, you have older hitters that have advanced approaches at the plate. I mean, maybe that's what you do to kind of ease them in. If you think that maybe this is something you're going to have to do going forward, don't you move them up a level or move them up one more level just to see how they react to more mature hitters? You know, you got a bunch of quad A guys down at triple A, guys that have big league experience, have big league approaches. They just don't have big league talent. So I think that would be beneficial.
I would endorse that wholeheartedly. You know, I would rather take a chance on a guy with who has more upside potential, even if they're raw like those two are, than to throw out the kind of the retread guys or the 4A type guys like Overton. You know, maybe it's too soon with Moore. You risk him not being ready, and you're hurting his confidence. They don't like to do that, but you know, the way they're pitching now, maybe they're better bets than the Heston or Overton or DeJong type guys.
And this is the indictment on the farm system kind of left by Jack Cerenzi, because they don't have those guys. They don't have guys at AAA that are ready, like young, talented pitchers at AAA, similar to the other positions we're going to talk about. They don't have those guys. They've had to go out. I mean, really, Moore is a Jaxy guy, but Povesy was a guy that Jerry had to require. I mean, you look at the AAA guys, Overton, DeJong, and Heston were all acquisitions because they just didn't have... You know, they didn't have upper-level talent in the organization. I talked to a couple scouts that have seen some of the teams, and, you know, it isn't much better. I mean, you have some guys at the younger levels, but it takes so long, and so many things can happen for a guy that's pitching well or playing well at high A by the time he gets to the big leagues that a lot can happen. So I just kind of think they're going to have to ride it out a little bit with these starters for a while.
Yeah, and, you know, Jerry did his best to add to the inventory. You know, every trade he tried to get a couple of live arms. You know, the Atlanta trade where he got Posey and who was the other pitcher he got in that trade?
Oh, Rob Whalen.
Whalen, yeah. And guys like that. And he picked up a lot of guys, Heston, guys like that. But you know, you're just hoping that maybe out of every three arms that you get or four arms, that maybe one will click. Because a lot of them are journeyman types or not ready yet or, you know, coming off injury or whatever. Then you're right, and it is an indictment of the Zerenzik era and a long stretch there where they just fizzled with draft choices, particularly high draft choices. We've talked about that in the past, which continues to haunt them, you know, where you had top five picks repeatedly, top 10 picks that just have not made their mark yet. It's incredible when you go back and look over the last 6 or 7 or 8 years where, you know, at draft positions where you should have impact guys and you just don't. You know, you just did not hit on those. And that has more than anything, I think, crippled this organization and put them in a position. You know, you overcome that with free agent signings and maybe some guys from lower down in the draft, like a Kyle Seager that hit, trades and all that. But, boy, if you could plug in the Dustin Ackley spot and the Holson spot and the Zunino spot and the DJ Peters spot and the Alex Jackson spot, all top 10, I believe, picks, or in many cases top five, that you really don't have much production from yet, it's really hurt them.
Yeah, you just made every Mariners fan listening to this want to start drinking right now, Larry. Good job.
Sorry about that, but reality is reality.
Or else there's some people just like me, they don't need an excuse to drink. They just do it every day.
I have the draft on my mind because I spent the last 3 days at the Seahawks headquarters, hour after hour, just listening to the picks drone on. So, you know, I'm draft conscious right now, or draft unconscious, more accurately.
All right, well, let's go. We'll switch topics. Who would you start at first base on Tuesday against the Angels?
Well, I know who I would not start at first base against the Angels, and that's Vogelbach, who just continues to unimpress me, both defensively and offensively. It wouldn't surprise me if he goes back down. And, you know, looking at the numbers, you know, maybe it's time for DJ Peterson to get his shot. I think he's hitting over 300. He's drawn some walks. You know, you got to keep trying something. So to answer your question, I'd probably put Motter out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's tailing off a little bit.
Yes.
But he's probably their best option at this point, unless you call up. Maybe they'll call up DJ Peterson and throw a new body out there and see what he could do.
All right. Let me get to that. So, first of all, you didn't watch the game today, so
I did not.
you didn't see Vogelbach miss the pop foul in foul territory, which was it was a pop foul, went into the sun. Chucho Ruiz kind of first put his glove up like he might have a play at it, and you could watch Vogelbach going, "Oh, I don't really want to catch this." He'd look at Chooch, and he'd run for it a little bit. He'd look at Chooch, and it was clear that it was his Vogelbach's ball. So he comes charging in, and then all of a sudden you can see that he'd overrun the ball, and he falls backwards. The
Yeah.
ball bounces, and he's laying there. I'm like, "Oh." And then later, there was a ground ball up the right side behind the bag. He doesn't field it cleanly, can't make a play. Almonte's safe. I mean, Chris DeYoung worked out of that inning, but we saw the couple games in Oakland where he didn't make plays that seemed relatively routine. And now you understand that he's not going to be great first base wise. I mean, they know that. But what they're still not getting the at bats. I mean, it seems like yesterday when they put him in to pinch hit, he watched two fastballs go by on two. He gets the count to 2-0. Watched a perfectly good fastball go by. Watched another fastball go by, and then flail at a curveball. These were the at bats that we saw in spring training, if I recall properly.
Yeah, that at bat there last night in a one-run game in the ninth inning was probably punched his ticket. That probably punched his ticket back to Tacoma because you can't let that fastball, a home run type pitch or a gapper type pitch when you need a run, you're desperate for a run. You can't let those two pitches go by and then flail away at a pitch in the dirt. That was just not a good major league at bat. And that's what this guy. That's all he's got to offer because he's not, as we've talked about the last couple of weeks, he's not going to dazzle you with his glove. He's a hitter. He's a future DH, but he's probably starting to press a little bit, and he just froze on those pitches. And it would not surprise me if he headed back to Tacoma before the Mariners return to action on Tuesday. What do you think about Peterson? Do you think they give him a shot? Have you heard anything from your scout friends?
I'd be stunned if they gave DJ Peterson a shot at this point. In talking with some people within the Mariners, they were stunned that DJ got put on the 40-man roster, to be honest. And he was awful during the spring. He had a home run in his first at bat, and then just really never did anything else. You hear things from scouts and from people. They weren't pleased with his attitude. We've heard that for years, that he's not real coachable. I thought maybe the new regime might help him kind of offset some stuff, but I don't know. I guess you could use him. I mean, I even though Taylor Motter has been hit over the head with the unrelenting hammer of regression the last 3 or 4 games, I still think he probably gives you a better at bat than anybody else that they're going to have right now. I mean, well, at least anybody that they have on the 40 man. It's not great. I mean, you've seen that the scouting report is out on him now. Curveballs away, fastballs away. And if you have pitchers that can actually execute it, you can get him out. Valencia, he had a couple of hits the other night. I mean, he plays better defense, I guess, than the other two. They're kind of
He's got a track record too, unlike Meyer, unlike Vogelbach and the others. He's been a solid major league hitter for a few years, so you gotta respect that and believe that he's gonna be back at some point. But you don't want to just bury him.
No, and I think I don't know if they're starting a lefty, so maybe. But I the Angels don't know who they're starting because they have a bunch of guys hurt. Tyler Skaggs just went on the DL. Garrett Richards is on the DL. JC Ramirez started a game for them the other night.
Do you remember he was a Mariner?
Twice, not once,
Yeah,
twice. Nice
he was
guy.
traded for, he went to, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm not looking this up, but I think he went to Philadelphia in the Cliff Lee trade,
I believe you're
humble
right.
trade.
I believe you're right.
Yeah. And then kind of lost track of him for a while, but he's still kicking around, so good for him. But who was a big Canadian first round
Oh, Philippe
reliever?
Amont.
Philippe Amont, yeah,
Yeah.
he never really clicked. I don't know if he's still, I don't think he's in the majors anymore, or who knows if he's even in the minors,
I think
but
he
that was
retired, actually. But yeah,
he was a retired one. Surprised me. Yeah. That was another odd draft pick. I can't remember if that was Jack or Bavese.
No, that was Bavese.
Bavese, yeah. That might be his last pick.
Yeah, boy.
No,
Bavese's last pick was Bavese's last pick was Josh Fields.
So. Yep, you're right, because the backdoor Mike Trout horror story there when Jack on the last day or the last week finally signed Fields and didn't get the compensatory pick, which may have turned into Mike Trout. We'll never know, but I think that would have been the pick ahead of Trout, right? And the Mariners supposedly had him on their radar.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know about Peterson. I'm going to go and this is the masochist that I am. I got Monday off. The Mariners don't play. I don't have to cover anything, sort of. DePoto's actually going to speak at that APSE thing that I have to go to on Monday. But I may go to Cheney Stadium over by my house and watch and see. I have not, in talking with scouts, opposing scouts, nothing they've said about Peterson makes me believe these numbers are that real. But, maybe they try him. He's on the 40, man. So it's not like it's a big deal to call him up. I guess, some service time, some money. But the Mariners' first base situation is so kind of just bleh that I was on the internet checking to see what James Loney was hitting in AAA for the Twins. Because Loney can...
What is he hitting?
188.
Okay. So,
because Loney can field. I mean, he can field the position. And, in the past, he would put together a competent at bat. But I think he might be done. Similar to, I don't even know where Justin Marneau is, if he's healthy. I'm trying to think, too, and we've had this, and I know I posted it earlier this year when I was doing those Tolstoy-length spring training previews. But... think back to the most productive first baseman that the Mariners have had.
Richie Sexsmith, when you go back and look at his numbers, as maligned as he was, he had a couple of the best years that Mariners first baseman have had in the last 15 years.
Oh, yeah. No, it is. Russell Branyon was the other guy that had a good year. And after that, it's just awful. Yeah, and then...
Yeah, Casey Kochman. Oh. There's been some, the smoke years.
The Mariners would take Justin Smoke's production right now. Right now, they would take that.
Absolutely. Yeah,
because they get in defense.
Pretty good year on a bad team, but.
I forgot. We were talking about the different first basemen, but yeah, there just hasn't been any. Oh, so I talked with a couple people that work for the A's, and one on the baseball ops side and one on the other, but they were kind of saying, they would, how Richie, the knock on Richie was always. He'd hit the home run when they're up six or down six. That they said that was how Valencia stacked up a lot of his numbers too. That he was that guy that always hit with, when they were out of it one way or the other. That it was never the clutch stuff. And so then when the other night when the Mariners are getting drilled in that 19-9 game and Valencia has a couple hits when he came in for Haniger, my buddies were texting me and they're like, "See, I told you."
It's funny how guys get that reputation.
Yeah.
I see it with guys who hit like 40 home runs. Oh, they weren't clutch. I find it hard to believe that you can have 40 home runs and 100 RBIs and a few who aren't clutch. But I guess there is some validity to that with some guys. And the other corollary to that is they get hot when the season is out of hand. August and September when they're out of contention. I think, that happened to Beltre a couple of years when he was with the Mariners. He would start off slow and then finish really strong when the Mariners were out of it. It's hard to knock Adrian Beltre because he's a great player and a Hall of Famer. And I think his Mariner numbers are better than people think they were. He was here for 5 years, which is hard to believe. It was a long time. But... he certainly was not the player that he has been in Texas or was the year before with the Dodgers, but he was solid while he was here. And I don't know how I got off on that.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't know what the hell you're talking about, but
please rescue me.
All right, so you would start. Who did you say you would start? Mater?
Mater, yeah.
Yeah, I'd start Mater, Valencia, I think. I don't know. I mean, Vogelbach just can't seem to slow the game down. I wrote that today, that he just cannot. Does not look comfortable, that everything looks like it's so difficult for him. And that's yeah. You just can't play like that. You can't play when you're that tensed up. So
when you're a young guy and you're trying to make your mark and you start off a little slow, you know, it's only human nature. You don't have your past production to fall back on. All you have is what you're doing now, and you feel like everyone's watching you and judging you. And some guys just don't handle that. They need a hot stretch to relax and finally be themselves.
Yeah.
And you know that'll come for Vogelbach, but it hasn't come yet. And the longer that it goes, the more you stress out. And I think that's where he is right now.
Yeah,
and that's what fast starts are so important for particularly young players. I think that's what Haneker. He actually wasn't his first two or three games he didn't hit, and then he just caught fire. And then you don't have to worry about making your mark. You've made it. You can just play and be yourself.
Yeah, I think Vogelbach, also the failures of spring weigh on him a little bit at it. You know, you're supposed to make the team. You play your way off the team in spring, and then you get to come back, and you want to do something to prove that you've earned that spot. And you just don't. And I mean, I don't know. I've never seen him enough when he was on to know what type of hitter he is. But if this is the hitter he's been, I mean, letting good fastballs go by, that's just not going to work for them. I mean, I get the control of the zone thing, but Scott Servais was not pleased about that at bat and the pinch hit at bat. I know that.
No, that's why I'm really curious to see what they decide to do with him. As my son is rattling pool balls over there.
Oh,
God. So. What was I saying? Anxious to see what they do with him. You know, they're in a delicate spot in his production. He's already been up a couple of times and back down. And, at some point, you got to give him a long run or just move on. And it's too soon for that now, but, he's certainly not helping him right now, that's for sure.
All right, let's get to catcher. When is the drop-dead point where you have to send Mike Zunino back to AAA?
Yeah, a month of the season is a pretty good trial. I'd give him a couple more weeks, I think. I think like halfway through May, if he's still riding the 190 train, there aren't great options. What do you got? Goswitch, right?
You have no options.
You got Goswitch and Barron. Chooch is not an everyday player at this stage of his career, so I don't know what to do. I think now that I talk through this, I think I'd rather have Zunino even struggle and give him a chance than any of those other options. Certainly not Steve Barron. Goswitch is. He's in his 30s, right? And he's had a whole career of being a backup catcher.
Yeah, Goswitch has 126 games of big league experience. He's a 199 hitter with like a sub-500 OPS. As one opposing scout told me, he's the Caucasian version of Jesus Sucre. So.
Yeah, exactly. With that in mind, you probably just grit your teeth and stick with Zunino for a while, but it's very discouraging. I love Mike Zunino. He's one of my favorite guys. You can't help but pull for him, but it just isn't happening. For every time you think you've seen the light, the next three at-bats will be just kind of, oh my God, that there he is again, waving at bad stuff, Defensively, he's strong, so he's got that going for him. You're not going to get a defensive upgrade with any of those other guys, and you're probably not going to get much of an offensive upgrade. So, they probably have little choice but to stick with Zunino. It really gets ugly. I was looking, just for fun, I think you did this too, the other day I was looking at, I went back for the last 6 years and looked at catcher production, which you could do on like ESPN splits, and I think they were, the Mariners are hitting like 160 as a catch from their entire catcher unit this year, and it's incredible how many times they've been at 200 or under 200 the last 6 years. Their production has just been horrible.
Well, the best catching season by WAR was Kenji Jojima, his second year in the big leagues.
Yeah, it's just been a long stretch of poor numbers from the catching, and there's been some just DH for a long time was not very good until they got they straightened that out, and then certainly it's been great this year. But first base has been a, like we already discussed. It's funny how they just cannot solve those problems. They finally found some outfielders that can hit. Like, that's one thing is they with the Haniger injury has shown that they have some pretty good outfield depth. When you could go down and get, you know, Heredia is doing well, Gamble, Luke Powell, they do have some better options there than they do at some of the other positions.
Yeah, you're not playing Norioki in center field. I mean, that's better, just in general.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What do you think about Zunino? Do you think that they're going to pull the trigger on one of those other guys? Or?
No, because they know they can't play Cheech. And maybe you play Cheech a couple days in a row or whatever. Like, I wouldn't be, you know, Cheech hit the ball hard today 4 times. And then get a bat. You have an off day tomorrow. I wouldn't be surprised if Cheech started again on Tuesday, with the only exception being Paxton is pitching, and Cheech struggles to handle Paxton's stuff. He just wears him out, you know, and it's just at 38, it's not as simple. Like, and Zunino has caught him forever. So I think that may be a reason why Zunino would stay there and catch Tuesday. But I wrote about this today for the Sunday Notebook, and I talked with Scott Servais a little bit privately, and then I talked with Zunino, and the last 4 or 5 days, maybe 3 or 4 days, Zunino has been working with Edgar and Scott Brosius pretty extensively early on, early BP, early cage work. He was there a lot today trying to just shorten up some of his leg stuff. And they feel like if, you know, the load position with his, you know, his load is shorter and everything else, and the legs are a little cleaner, that it shortens the swing up, you know, and basically he's just missing pitches. Like, the approach with Mike is better, like in terms of not just waving at everything. He's just missing pitches in the strike zone that he should hit. He fouls them back, or he fouls them off, or he just swings and misses. Like, they have all the swing percentages and stuff of pitches that he swings at that are in the strike zone. He's only making contact on like 67, or he's only, you know, decent contact rate of 67%. It's supposed to be 87% as an average in the strike zone. He's not doing that. His swing, when he swings and, you know, swings and misses, he's got like a 15% of the time when he swings and misses. That's just not, you know, ideal. So I don't know what's going on there, but they don't have any other options. They just can't, you can't play Cheech, you know, 4 days a week. He's 38. I mean, like Servais kind of talked about it. You know, when you're the backup catcher and you're older, you know what days you're going to play. Like, it's mapped out. So you can kind of prepare yourself all week, your days off, to mentally be ready. But to sit there and go out there every day and do it, it's just not going to happen. And Ghost Witch isn't an answer. And Steve Barron is an answer. Nobody at Double A is an answer. I don't know what they do. I mean, you have to go out and look around. I mean, it was so hard to find catching. Like, it's so hard to find quality catching that I just don't know that they can do that. This is similar to 2 years ago when Mike was in all that trouble. Jack made the one smart move of trading for Wellington Castillo and then traded him away like 8 days later. I don't think that Topoto would do that. But, I mean, they know that if this isn't working with Mike, if they have to send Mike down to Tacoma to clear his head or whatever, they cannot – I just can't see them using the duo of Ghost Witch and Cheech Ruiz every, you know, some combination to fill that time. I'd be stunned. So I don't know. Yeah. It's kind of like Mike is locked into a spot because nobody else can really handle what he does, you know, and he still does it well enough that, you know, there's value there. I liken it to me at the times. I'm pretty safe because none of you guys would ever be crazy enough to do this job the way that it's constituted now. So I figure, like, you know, I'm just dumb enough to do it. I seem to know what I'm doing, you know. They're going to kind of keep me around.
Well, I will say this. You're doing your job much better than Mike Zunisa.
Oh, thanks.
Sorry, Mike, but I can't say that.
Not a huge bar to climb to hit over 200, Larry.
That's true. The discouraging thing is they already went through this, the wasted year, not wasted year, but the find yourself year, you know, back to AAA to rediscover yourself. And he worked with Brocious and had that, you know, great turnaround. He came up and looked better. And now Brocious is here on the staff as the assistant hitting coach or assistant coach in charge of helping Edgar with the hitting, and I think that Zunino was supposed to be kind of his pet project, and everyone thought that having Brocious here in the major leagues was going to be a huge help for Zunino, and here he is still struggling. I do agree with you. For the most part, he does not look lost at the plate like he has in the past. You know, you nailed it on the head. He's just, yeah, as you watch, you see pitches that he's right on, and yet he's fouling it off, or he's swinging through it, but you know it looks like he's got it measured and everything. It's just not hitting it, which is kind of inexplicable. You know, he's never going to be. I think it's clear by now that he's never going to be a Johnny Bench, but I still think he could be an average major league hitter. Maybe that's just at this point. Maybe I'm being overly Pollyannish on that. Because he's had a lot of time to show that he can, but you see enough flashes of it to think that there's something there with a bat.
Well, we got a Pollyanna reference, the Disney 1950s, 1960s. Nice job there. That's a good one. Way to skew ancient.
Yeah, I have to have one of those podcasts so that you can say I skew ancient.
Yes.
Well, I do. At least I didn't give you my when we were talking about Mater, I didn't start singing.
Hello, Mutter. Yeah.
Hello,
oh, gosh.
Speaking of the 1960s.
Yes. I don't know what it is with Zunino. In talking with Mike, he says he's seeing it. He's recognizing what he wants to do. He just isn't able to do it. And I don't know if that's even scarier for them, is that he can't do it, like that he's put himself in this position. He swears that he's in a better mental space than he was a few years ago, and I believe him. But, I mean, you still got to walk up there and see you're hitting 160 when you walk up there and they announce your name. I mean, and you're right. They're not asking him to. We said this before. They're not asking him to hit 270. They're asking him to hit 220 and take some walks. Because, like, in service, I mentioned this, and we've talked about it. Shorten up your swing a little bit. Just put more balls in play. Because he's so ridiculously, freakishly strong that he'll hit the ball hard if he can just put it on the barrel. Like, the ball's going to go somewhere because he's so strong. But that's been the issue. I don't know what gets fixed first. I would say first base maybe, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, when you get to 6 or 7, 8, 9 in the lineup and you're looking at Valencia or Vogelbach hitting, you know, whatever, one whatever, and then Zunino, and then, you know, even Dyson is hovering around 230 with no power, it's troublesome.
It's a break for the pitcher. It's like being in the National League in the 8-9 spots in the National League, unless Madison Bumgarner's hitting or whatever. But no, 8-9 spot in the National League. That's what they have. Pitchers can totally, and they can work. You know, I mean, like with Seager at 5, and you have Valencia or Vogelbach hitting behind him. I mean, or, you know, whoever, you can maneuver yourself a little bit to not give him anything because you feel like you can get outs later in the order.
Yeah, and that's what I think DePoto thought he had lengthened the lineup this year, and it's just not working out yet. You know, Dyson is what Dyson is. His on-base percentage is still over 300, but he's never going to be anything but a singles hitter. So you knew that was going to be there, but you needed the guys above him to give you a little bit more protection in that lineup, and that just hasn't happened yet. And That's one reason why they're struggling. We've sort of pinpointed the three or four problem areas that they're going to have to address for this thing to turn around.
Yeah. All right, let's go into former Mariner land here, because everybody gets mad when I do the ex-Mariner alert. But I don't know if you saw it the other night, but there was a Fernando experience. The Fernando Rodney experience rolled again. And he comes in and gives up a few runs, you know. Just and yet, as unpredictable as he is, this bullpen could use Fernando Rodney in some way. I'm not saying he's the closer. I'm not saying that. But they could use him. So any thoughts on the former Fernando Rodney experience?
Well, my thought, I guess, is that this is turning into a pretty good Arizona team, and I just wonder if he's going to, like, send everything crashing. you know, he's getting up there in years. What is he? Is he 40 now?
I think he's 39.
39, yeah. And he's still got some stuff left, but I don't know. I wouldn't entrust my bullpen at this stage of his career to Fernando Rodney. I would make him maybe a setup guy at best, because I think he's going to break your heart.
He just perpetually allows runners to reach base. I mean, Arizona didn't have a whole lot of other choices, but it was my buddy Doug Pacey, who works down there now, and works down there. He used to work at the TNT. He said the other day that he was listening to sports talk, and they were talking about Fernando Rodney, and the guy's like, it's so bad that a Seattle sports writer coined the nickname the Fernando Rodney experience. And I was like, yes.
Yeah, you're getting some good play on that one.
Yeah.
You know, just like King Felix, yeah, that's his name. I think it was Dave Cameron who named that. Yeah. I mean, you're like a Fernando Rodney experience.
I love Fernando Rodney. He's so entertaining. He's great. But he's great when you're not covering him. When you're covering him and it's on deadline, he's the last guy you want to see coming into a game.
Yeah. Well, how about Edwin Diaz? It's a closer who never gets to close. He had the back-to-back saves this week, but how many save opportunities has he had a month into the season?
Not many, because when the Mariners win, they either win big or they get their ass kicked. There's no happy medium, really.
Right, so you haven't even had to experience the Edwin Diaz experience, good or bad, very much, which, I think that's a concern for the Mariners. You want to keep your guy sharp, and you want to have some leads for him to protect, so it'll be interesting to see if he starts to use him a little bit more in non-traditional save situations just to keep him sharp. If there was a stretch there where he went like a week without having a save opportunity, and, at some point you just got to throw him into a game.
Yeah, they're going to do that on the road, definitely, I think, just if he hasn't. You know, he had the four out save the other day. They're just like, yeah, we got to throw him. So, and he's a young kid; he's not going to wear it down. No other Fernando Rodney thoughts.
Not really. I still like the way he wears his hat, and he's a fun guy. But I think this Arizona team is much better than anyone thought they were going to be. Although they just lost Shelby Miller for the season, but I guess my thought is, I wouldn't want him closing on my team at this point. Not just because, not out of respect for the beat writer who has to deal with his meltdowns, but I just don't think he's a quality closer at this stage.
All right, they got six games on the homestand, and we're going to do this math, very simple math here, okay? We've got six games on the homestand. What is their record going to be?
They're going to be 8-2, and I'm just kidding. who are they playing again?
They play Anaheim for 3, and then Texas for 3, which is equals 6.
I think they'll go 4-2.
4-2, and they're going to win both of them, or are they going to sweep one? And
I think they'll sweep the Angels and
Angels
lose
first.
2 out of 3 to Texas. sweep the Angels and lose 2 out of 3 to Texas.
All right, that's good. We got a good prediction. I didn't have to mock you or anything like that. So, all right, you enjoy Boston, and you know, enjoy your time watching. Are you gonna cry?
We'll see. I think I did my I did when my oldest daughter graduated. So this is number 2 graduating. So yeah, I'm sure I will. It's a big moment. It's a big moment in your parenting life when your kid graduates college.
She's going to more college, Larry. It's not like she's going to law school.
Yeah, she is going to law school.
There'll
be more graduations ahead.
I can't wait till when your son graduates here in May, then or in June. Then there's going to be some real waterworks because you're going to be an empty nester.
Yeah, that's going to be a poignant one because that means that's the empty nest because that's our last child at home and he's going to go off to college and then I, got to figure out what to do with the rest of my life without the kids to shepherd around and go to their sporting events and their dances and all that stuff. So that's going to be major.
Hey, you can come hang out at the bars with me. You know, that'll always be fun.
Yeah, that might start doing that a little bit more. I am going to go see I'm going to go to a Red Sox game on Thursday. Red Sox Orioles. I'm taking my daughter and my other daughter and her family. My in-laws live in Boston, and I'm going to take them all to a Red Sox game at Fenway. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, we've both done Fenway a lot. Do you have any recommendations for people going there and never been?
Well, this is my first time sitting in the stands. I guess my only recommendation would be just to go early and hang around the area there around Fenway with the bars and the restaurants and the activity. It's just a blast.
Yeah, Yawkey Way there where they have all their you got to get an Italian sausage while you're there, you know, or a brat. You know, they have the street vendors. You got to get one of those. Go to the Cask and Flag and the Lansdowner. It's like right out of an SNL skit, you know. Everybody's talking with the heavy Boston accents. It's good.
No, ma.
Yeah.
It's definitely. And there's lots of sports shops. You can get memorabilia and that sort of thing. So, but maybe I'll have some tips about what it's like to see a game from the stands. I've only done it from the press box, so this will be a new experience for me.
All right, I will let you go. Thanks for being this.
Okay. All right.
That's it for this week's show. Next week, I'm going to try and get Mike Curto of the Tacoma Rainiers to come on with me. I might even do it a little bit earlier. And we'll also do a mailbag podcast as well at some point. Big thanks to Larry Stone for coming on, spending a Sunday night talking with me. And also thanks to Midnight Salvage Company, the official house band of the Extra Innings Podcast, for the bumper music and lead-in music. If you want to submit your music, let me know. You can reach me by email at rdivish@seattletimes.com or hit me up on Twitter @RyanDivish. And thanks again. Talk to you later.